If you need to buy or refinance a home, you can contact Dave Hochberg at 855-563-2843. He is the sponsor of our show. And we do this because he allows us to and gives us some money every once in a while to do this show. But the ILACP is also today. We have a couple of our returning chiefs on today. We have Chief David Bird from DeKalb and Mimi McGreal from Illinois State Police, retired. And so today we are going to talk about Hollywood. So if you're out there listening and you watch TV shows about cops, and everybody knows they're probably the coolest shows. You either got shows about cops or lawyers or both. You know, it's one of the biggest things that's out there in the media. So before we actually when we get started here, I'm going to flip it right to you, Dave or Mimi. Let's go with Mimi and say, do you remember the first time you saw a police officer portrayed in a movie or a TV show? And what was your reaction? We might be going way back here.
Holy cow, am I going way back? I'm probably going way back and I don't even remember.
Did that have any impact on you wanting to become a police officer?
No, okay. Not any shows, nothing like that. When I became the police, it was more or less I saw police officers around the neighborhood. I actually saw a state trooper that lived close by. So no, it wasn't the shows. What about you, Dave?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was actually the shows.
It was.
Yeah, what was because it? I mean, I have a picture of my office with 5 years old with a badge on. So I was all in. And it was because of my experiences. And then, like I said, watching like The Rookies was one of the first shows I think I saw. It was fantastic police movie. SWAT, of course, the original SWAT, not this other stuff. I used to watch Hondo and I watched Deke jump through jump through the window every time. I thought that was cool. And TJ was on the roof and he had his scope and he was a sniper. I was like, man, so I was like, okay, look at these guys, you know, and it was pretty cool to watch them as they maneuvered around. Now, of course, you know, I didn't know. I mean, I was a kid, so I mean, all of it looked real to me. So I assumed all the cops were doing this. And, you know, and TJ Hooker is another one. I mean, I knew so many cop shows back then that Adam 12, which is which is the reason why people call police 12 now. They always say, hey, 12's coming, or, you know, it's a slang term for police, but it came from Adam 12. So that was another police show way back. So that must have carried from a different generation, because this generation that's using that term have never watched that show, I guarantee. So
correct, yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But yeah, Kirk, that's how I really wanted to that started my whole infatuation with being a police officer, for sure.
I was a chips guy. Ah. I loved chips. Ponch and John. I've never driven a motorcycle in my life, but the whole idea behind Ponch and John and the California Highway Patrol was probably one of my favorite shows growing up, besides the Brady Bunch, which had nothing to do with policing. But I really enjoyed, and it seemed like they got into a car crash or a pursuit in every single episode. They never shot anybody, which is probably a sign of the times. And we'll get into that in a little bit. Obviously, the Hollywood versus reality, you know, and the core themes that we're seeing a lot of times about, you know, because everybody always talks to me about, oh, is it, you know, it must be so exciting to be a police officer. You know, oh, I see all this stuff and everything like that. But getting back to that, Chips, Ponch and John, my first cat's name was actually Poncherello, Franklin Poncherello.
Oh, wow.
Because I was such a big
fan. I do remember Chips there, Kirk. I do remember watching that.
I would assume that both of you with your Illinois State Police backgrounds would have been a big Chip fan, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, Kirk, it was always some unbelievable pileup every episode or something. I'm like, man, how often does this happen? I mean, like, every episode they had to have something happen that was unbelievable. I'm like, okay, I get it's Hollywood, but man, this is a lot.
And as I've grown up and I've become a chief, and I'm sure Dave, yeah. you know, as the supervisors and leaders in your organization, after about two episodes of watching Chips, Ponch and John probably would have been on desk duty for the rest of their career. yeah. The amount of crashes and pursuits that they got into, the amount of damage that they caused, they tended to be a little bit of a liability, I'm assuming.
They did. That's funny.
So, let's go through some of these things. We have this Hollywood versus reality and core right. themes. And if you can kind of talk about, and we'll start with you, Dave, use of force. So, you know, let's talk about that one right off the get-go. But in movies, cops often pull their guns quickly, you know, yeah. and they shoot with perfect accuracy. How does this differ in real life use of force protocols?
Well, of course. I mean, come on. Let's be real. I mean, we're talking about in real life. You're talking about someone truly who's in danger of losing their life, or receiving some severe, bodily injury or something involved in a shooting. So that's a serious situation, and nerves are involved. You know, you're not as cool as you watch T.J. Hooker. He would line them up, and he would just, you know, like, okay, look at this guy with his revolver. The thing that always gets me, Kirk, is the administrative piece to it, because it's like, you know, doggone well, you know, this guy in Hollywood, they shoot someone and then hours later they're back on the scene and they're running again. And you know, and it's like the boss comes, he says, hey, internal affairs is going to want to talk to you in a few days, you know, whatever, you know, but go out there and get that guy. You know, it's like, really? I was like, so he gets to go back out and continue to do his job, even though he was involved in officer-involved shooting. I was like, okay. But in real life, of course, we all know, I mean, there's more to that. I mean, you know, there's a complete investigation that has to, you know, that has to begin. And then, you know, those officers are, you know, are put on administrative duties, or depending on the situation. Some people use administrative leave. Some people, it's administrative duty, just depends on your department and on the situation. But I mean, you talk about officers being, in plain clothes, doing administrative duties for over 30 days, sometimes close to 60 days. It just depends, how long the investigation takes. So that right away, you can see the difference, because there's no, you know, these officers in Hollywood are back in action within hours, you know, and then in real life, of course, you know, we're giving our officers, you know, who need, you know, sleep cycles. So, you know, like they're involved in the shooting. It's, you know, this is a traumatic incident for them personally. We always got to, you know, people forget about how traumatic this is for the police officer. So we want to give them sleep cycles so they can, get their mental state back in order. And then we still have to have the conversation on what occurred. I mean, we have to have that conversation. Your officer was involved in shooting, someone was struck, or even if they weren't, if you have a situation where no one was struck, you still need to have a conversation about what occurred. And it's just so many things that have to go into that administrative investigation. So that one right off the bat, always just, that's the one that gets me all the time. It's like, wow, okay, you're back to work and you're chasing the bad guy. I was after you were involved in another officer involved shooting. So that's the one that sticks out to me, Kurt.
Yeah. And I think from my perspective, the number of times that, you know, when you watch these shows and I do like certain police shows, I think some of them are really good. Yeah. And I'll get into later with Bosch. I watch Bosch, and I think he's a great show. He's kind of a rogue cop and he does things, but the number of times that he gets into shootouts is astronomical. There's a research from the Pew Research that says only about 27% of their officers have ever fired their service weapon outside of the gun range in their entire career.
Yeah.
And yet you have these people that on TV that are doing it every single week or every single episode, multiple times an episode. So,
yeah.
It's an interesting conundrum. And I think that gets lost on people. And I said this, and maybe you could probably back this up, but, you know, they fire with precision accuracy. Is that always the case in what you've seen in your career from, you know, seeing different officer-involved shootings and different things like that?
Oh, yeah. They always shoot perfect. Absolutely. I mean, on the show, they do.
Yeah.
Obviously not in real life, you know. But one of the things that sticks out to me is that there's so much left out in Hollywood. There's just from the start of a, you know, whether it's a pursuit or whatever it is, a shooting. There's so much left out because you could take, you know, one of those scenarios, the first 45 minutes of it is literally you're on the scene, you're trying to figure out what happens. And then there's your show if they really were to show the whole thing. But in Hollywood, they just leave so much out because they have time constraints. They want to get the plot. They want to get, you know, the show moving. And that's, you know, really what it comes down to is that there's just a lot of missing pieces. You know, and they want excitement too. That's the other thing. They want people to watch the shows and they want, you know, they show all the good stuff, right? Not the behind the scenes, maybe boring things that we have to go through and the important things that we have to go through. But as far as like, the accuracy, oh yeah, Hollywood is super accurate, you know.
Yeah. So that kind of comes into like, you know, you talk about they solve that murder in 48 minutes, DNA results come back. You know, what's the reality, you know, for our listeners, what's the reality in what it takes to solve a major crime? Like, how long does it really take to process evidence, get warrants, make arrests? I mean, what are we talking here? A couple days?
Yeah, you're talking
couple weeks.
Oh, even, I mean, it depends, right, Kirk? Sometimes, even when you got all your ducks in a row, it might not be a true whodunit type case. You might have your suspect, with a smoking gun in hand. I mean, the whole nine yards. But even with that, there's so many search warrants that have to be, you know, executed. I mean, the documentation alone takes, I mean, you're talking months. I mean, you know, I mean, the investigation could go on for weeks, and then you got documentation that's going to go into months. The turnaround on lab results and, you know, I mean, even when you expedite a case, you know, could be a couple of weeks. It just depends, you know. If you have a real burner of a case, you could probably get those results, of course, faster, but the, you know, the state lab, in Illinois is pretty busy. I mean, they have a serious workload. So if you're going to get pushed to the front of the line, it's going to have to be a significant case. Otherwise, you're going to get in line like everyone else, and everyone has a case going. I mean, you know, I mean, who, you know, what agency might not have something going on, and they think it's important to them, of course, because it's their case. So, yeah, you're talking, you know, I mean, several weeks to months, on most of these cases, Kirk. So,
You bring up a good point about the labs, and for people that don't know, if we're going to send evidence to a crime lab, it's going to go to the Illinois State Police Crime Lab. And I don't know how many state police crime labs are there right now. Do you know? I think Chicago Police has their own crime lab.
I think there's, I mean, I'm just going to throw this out there. I think there's six or seven, at least, crime labs in the state.
But for the entire state of Illinois. So every single piece of evidence that needs to go and get analyzed has to do that. And I think we found this in my agency, is the disconnect between fingerprints. And when we do our Citizens Academy and we do fingerprints and we ask people, how long do you think it takes to process a fingerprint for a burglary or something like that? And, you know, they'd be like, oh, probably in a day, you know, maybe a couple hours. Well, a lot of times some of those fingerprints, now it does, they get backlogged. And sometimes we were waiting up to 9 to 12 months to get fingerprint stuff back on nonviolent crimes. Now it's important to know that, you know, the violent crimes, obviously, like you said, get pushed to the front. But you know, when you have a nonviolent crime, like a burglary or a house, you know, your house gets, you know, burglarized or your car gets broken into, a lot of times those fingerprints, get pushed way to the back of the line and may take months and months and months for them to figure out.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, like, you know, like I said, the workload for the state police labs are extensive. I, you know, with me, you know, retiring from there, Mimi as well, we, you know, we should talk to the colonel who's, you know, over the labs, and believe me, I mean, they, they work hard. Don't get me wrong. They do. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot. And they have all these cases filtering in at the same time. And everyone wants to be a priority. I mean, of course, like I said, it's your case. I mean, of course you want yours up to the front, but they triage that. And there's a, and they have to put it and prioritize those cases, and they get them to you as fast as you can. But you have to, you know, and most agencies, like, we're continuing to work our case waiting on those lab results. I mean, we're moving. You know, there are a lot of things that can be done while you wait. Hopefully it doesn't stall your case out. But, you know, sometimes you do get to a point where you just, now you're waiting on a lab because you need to know if you can put this, whoever this suspect is or person of interest at the scene based on these lab results. So sometimes you're waiting on that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting too. I'll add that when people, a lot of people love to see the CSI shows, and they like to see how the people that are processing the evidence are actually going out and investigating it as well. And then they're actually doing the case, which is not necessarily the case in the majority of police, you know, of police departments throughout the country. You have the detectives, the investigators, you have them processing the crime scene, and then that's sent to the lab. And then those people that are in the lab are generally scientists. They're forensic scientists. They're actually not out there investigating the crime. Now, they will talk about it, and they will help the officers and the investigators with theories and things that they find. But generally, they're not leaving the lab. They're providing the evidence. They're providing the casework to the detective, and they're staying there. So
that's a good one.
It's not quite as a high profile as it.
Yeah. What is that? What's the one? CSI. What is the one? My mom watches.
Like, yes.
Is that CSI. It? And they go and they process the crime scene. They go make arrests. They got guns. I mean, I'm like. Now, I'm not saying, I mean, like the state police and Chicago police, they're crime scene techs, they're swarm personnel, but, you know, and they have firearms, but that's not their job. Their job is to process the scene, and they turn it over to the detectives, and the detectives go run down the bad guy. So you don't see a crime scene tech from Chicago or from the state police or any other agency. They like, look, this is my job. Is to, you know, come and process the scene for you. And I'm going to turn the information over to you as detectives, and you go do your job, you know. But my mom loves that show because I forgot. I don't know if it's Mark Harmon. I can't think. Oh, no, yes.
Yep, that's who it was initially.
Yeah, so these guys do everything. I mean, they do it all.
And I'll tell you one thing that they do, and Dave, Chief Bird, you're the exception because you are very well-dressed. Most police officers, I'm just going to get this out there to all of our listeners, that most police officers do not dress like they dress on television. Did you ever dress like that, Mimi, as an investigator? I mean, some of the things that these investigators and female cops wear, those are not conducive to doing the job very much.
No. Hey, Kirk, I got to jump, but before I jump, I just wanted to say, speaking Hollywood, one of the, and I know Dave will probably agree with this too, because we watched it at the same time, but The
Wire
was my favorite show ever. What? And it was the most realistic, yes. The closest that they got to police work. I love the show. I actually, we still talk about it. And, you know, we still, you know, Omar, we still talk about certain,
characters, you know, yeah.
Characters on the show. When he died in real life, we were all sad, yeah. But,
true.
That was probably one of the most realistic shows out there was The Wire. Really? And then after that, with the kids, like they wanted to sit down and watch The Rookie. So we watched like tons of episodes of, now that was really, really super Hollywood though. That was,
yeah, it was. Like, oh, that, I they watched a couple me, episodes.
They would say, that happens. I'm like, no, that does not happen. Like, I'd have to. And then I would say the other thing is obviously the gory part of it, and what we see, like whether it's a shooting or what have you, is just a sliver of what we actually are seeing, and what actually the bloody gory part. That's, as you know, it's definitely constricted with Hollywood. They don't show everything. It's 100 times worse than what we're seeing. So But yeah, I just wanted to get that out there. So you could talk about The Wire a little bit more there.
Oh yeah, The Wire was great. I mean, they had trapped vehicles. They had officers. I mean, the stuff that we dealt with all the time in Chicago, we have vehicles that we would stop and they would be, and they would have traps in their vehicles, which would, concealment methods of how to conceal, of course, firearms and illegal contraband. Some of them were just natural voids in the vehicle that they made concealment areas for narcotics, firearms. And then some of them people paid for. You're talking $2,500 up to $5,000 for a trap or that was on hydraulics. And The Wire actually had one of those. And that resonated with me. So I was like, I think me and a couple of our friends, we called each other and we were like, did you see that? They had a trap in this episode. I'm like, wow, okay, this is the real deal.
Even the politics were really, they were intertwined in that. And that was pretty accurate how the politics work.
Yeah, it was.
With that too. Yeah, in Baltimore.
Well, Mimi, we'll catch up with you later. Thanks for coming on. Dave and I are sitting around for a little bit.
Absolutely, guys. Talk to you soon.
CP, be careful.
CP. All right, you too.
So, yeah, that's a good one, though. The Wire was good. I don't know if you ever watched it, Kirk.
I have not watched The Wire, but I was going to say one of the shows that I've, and I want to get your opinion on this, and maybe you haven't watched it. But have you ever watched Blue Bloods?
I watched a little bit of
that. I've only watched a couple episodes. Yeah. And, but what I've seen is, Blue Bloods has got still the police action, and it's still Hollywood. They're shooting a lot of people. They're getting in a lot of things. Yeah. But what I noticed from a Chiefs perspective is the politics and the personnel issues that they deal with, that Tom Selleck's character deals with on the show are very, very realistic. And things that are happening not only in big cities, but smaller cities like ours. And I've thought that's, and I think some of the stuff they tear from the headlines, kind of like Law and Order does.
Law and Order.
Yeah, they take something that's happened in real life and they kind of dramatize it. But what I've found is that the decision-making process that he goes through in that show is very similar to this decision-making process because, what I think people don't understand is like, in a television show, it's always the boss and they're angry and they're yelling at the rookie or the investigator. But realistically, these people that are in our organization, they're kind of like our family, And, so when things happen to them, it's very personal. It's very personal to us. And when bad things happen or people do things that they're not supposed to do, we are very deliberate and take a lot of time to try to come up with the right decision, because every decision we make, not only affects ourselves, the officer, but it affects the organization. And then it also affects the community as a whole. And I think that's, sometimes we have to make some tough decisions that don't always, bode well with some of our officers, but it's what's best for the organization. It's what's best for the community. And you kind of have to weigh all of that things. And I think that show does a pretty decent job of that.
I do too. In the episodes that I've watched and to your point, Kirk, some of the decisions we make, and this is how I always phrase it, sometimes, you got to save people from themselves, and that doesn't always go well. Like you said, I make decisions for officers sometimes and they it might not be what they want. Like you said, they might feel like they feel totally different. We don't even agree we're not on the same wavelength. I understand that. But sometimes you have to say, hey, look, my experience tells me this. I've been doing this for so long and I know how this is going to possibly turn out. So I'm going to save you from yourself and I'm going to take some action here. And it's going to be for the better. You won't see it now. You might see it later. Or maybe not. This might be something that you might forever say, hey, the chief pissed me off about that. I never liked that. I didn't like that decision. But, as in our role, Kirk, sometimes we have to do what we think is best. And you said that earlier about with all the different entities that it applies to and different parts of the organization. And in Blue Bloods as well, you see that. And then you see they have that family connection, which mm-hmm. is, I mean, that's, I mean, I know families that are like that, where you have bosses who have daughters and sons, nephews who are all in the same agency. And, you know, now normally you try to spread them out if you have a big enough department where you can do that, like Chicago or these big, you know, departments where you can spread them out a little bit. That, you know, to me, that's probably a better, you know, I would, a smaller agency where you got the whole family, five or six people working in the same agency, that I know people would probably look at that and kind of give you the side eye on that one.
But, yeah.
You know, but a big agency, I mean, you can spread them out. You know, you can be in different districts, different units. We have a trooper. Her name is, she's retired, worked with me for years. And Carlita Joe, she has she almost has a tree. Her whole family are state police. It's like four or five of her, either two or three of her children, and then maybe a nephew, and then one through marriage. So it's like about five of them. And they all are state police. And it's beautiful to see. They took a picture at the last graduation, Kirk. It was awesome. Cause her youngest kid, I think, came through. And, it was really nice to see that family. And I mean, true family. Now you're talking about blood, and now you're mixing it with your law enforcement family. It was pretty cool to see, Kirk. So that was so yeah, I can relate to Blue Bloods. And I know you mentioned The Shield. You watched, that was kind of your show, huh?
I did not watch The Shield, but it's funny you're going to talk about that, because it was kind of one of the things I was going to say. It was Training Day and The Shield, yeah. Right? So they have these, you know, I didn't really watch The Shield, but I did watch Training Day. I thought it was a good movie. I mean, it was entertaining. I like entertaining movies. I don't take it for personal, but you know, so these they depict rogue officers operating above the law. So, Dave, did you work in undercover work?
I did.
Okay, yeah. So tell me, and I never did undercover work, but how realistic is some of this stuff? And do departments actually deal with this type of misconduct with people that are in undercover roles?
All right. So, I mean, I think in certain, I mean, I hate to, you know, I always want to present law enforcement in a positive, in a positive manner. I want to give anybody a black eye. We'd be naive though to think that, believe me, these shows came about because of something that has happened truly, maybe not on that level, but something spurred that conversation to say, hey, we should do a story about this. You know, so there's always some truth in this, and all these type of these big Hollywood shows and about law enforcement, there's a little bit of truth there. So I'm sure there are, you know, those things occur. I remember, it was years ago. I mean, I was still on the job. Of course, I was on the job, but I believe there was a New Orleans officer, if I'm not mistaken, that was working his regular shift. And he wasn't getting paid enough because they weren't paying their salary wasn't that great. And then he would go out and commit robberies. I mean, like, and that was legit. So, I mean, that happened. And if I'm not mistaken, the same thing occurred with the Chicago police officer years ago as well. So the corruption. Yeah, of course it happens, Kirk. When I was undercover, I was with Lake County Meg. They needed an officer from outside of Lake County. So I was buying drugs in North Chicago, Waukegan. I was from Chicago, so they didn't know me, so they brought me in. But there's so much oversight too, though, Kirk, at least with the state police running that MEG unit, there was so much oversight. You had to, of course, account for everything, every transaction, it was taped, the only way that a lot of these things, you would have to have a breakdown somewhere, or at least you have to have collusion with everybody. I mean, to do some of the stuff that they're doing on TV, like Training Day, look how many levels, you know, he had all his, I mean, he had his, he was kind of the head of it, but then look at all the people that were in line with them, you know, and then when you take Officer Hoyt into it, who's like, he's clean. He's like, look, this ain't what I do. I'm a police officer. I don't believe in this. And then they basically entrap him. You know, they blackmail Officer Hoyt. You know, I mean, look what he did to him. So, although I would find that, I don't want to be naive about this, Kirk, because I guess in theory, like I said, something similar could truly happen. I just feel like that checks and balance is going to catch up pretty quick, with something like that.
I think you're right with that. And you said, I don't want to be naive and say that we'd never have had dirty cops or corrupt police officers, because there's a history of it. And
yeah, we know that
nobody that like, there's nobody that dislikes a corrupt police officer than a good police officer. Yeah. You know, we hate them more than anything else. So, cause they give us a bad name and they do bad things. I think what happens in Hollywood is that it's over dramatized.
Yeah.
And it's almost, you know, Hollywood makes you kind of root for that dirty cop.
Bad guy.
It makes you like the things they're doing, as opposed to that the things they're doing are actually really terrible, and they're hurting people and they're hurting innocent people. And you mentioned the checks and balances, and you said something called MEG, just to give everybody a thing. They're MEG's Eye units, which is a Metropolitan Enforcement Group. What it is, are MEG units. They're all throughout the state, run by the state police, and they do a lot of undercover drug work. You know, usually street level, and then all the way up to as high as they can go. So they do a lot of really good work, but they have a lot of checks and balances.
Yeah, they do.
So when you have that, you have supervisors that are trusted, and you have other people running these things. So you're not just going out, and you're not that lone wolf cop that's going out by themselves and buying dope or making deals. Now, these deals are all very, they're very intricate. They're very planned details. Everything. You've got people watching. You've got people as cover officers. You've got a lot of different things. Not to say that it can't be dangerous, but we try to, as much as we can, take the danger out of those positions or out of those deals, so that way we can keep ourselves and everybody safe.
And I will tell you, I had one in my surveillance team, which was fantastic, because most of them, I was part of a gang unit in Chicago back then, state police gang unit. So they came in. They covered me on all, most of them. I mean, along with Lake County, they had, you know, the task force, they had officers, but my surveillance team was built up of mostly of my people who knew, you know, who I worked with every day. But, one night they lost me, man. I had a guy in the car with me that I picked up off the street, and he was actually helping me get in some places, because there was a couple of places, Kirk, I went to, and they just slammed the door in my face, because it wasn't a lot of street sales, but you had to these are more of this knock and see what you can get, you had to go down into this basement door, you knock on the door, you know, whatever. And they would, you know, and then you could try to, you know, make a purchase or, you know, get a sale done there. But they were slamming the door in my face because they didn't recognize, they didn't know who I was. And then, and so this guy jumped, he just knocked on my window one day at a stop sign. I'm in this undercover vehicle, which was a piece of crap. I mean, I had to jump start this car every day, Kirk, to get it going. And he jumps in the car with me, but he got me in so many places because they knew him. He was from the area. They knew who he was. And he got me in a lot of places. But this one night, he got me turning corners. Hey, go here, turn here, whatever. And my guys lost me. And they's like, man, so once I got back on the radio, which I kept hitting, I had it Velcroed under my seat. I get back on the radio, and then I'm like, you guys got me. They're like, dude, we lost you like 30 minutes ago. I'm like, okay. I was like, all right. So it is what it is. You're on your own, man, sometimes, and you just got to handle it. So so I guess, you know, that's to your point, though, Kirk, like, it's sad to say, but let's, you know, we got to be real about it. You know, of course there's, you know, people doing things as you see on, like I said, that's why these shows came about. I mean, they didn't just make this stuff up, man. I mean, you go back to Serpico, which is a movie years and years ago, which I watched, it was about, you know, you got one good officer who stood up against a ton of bad officers, which was based on a true story. And so that just goes to show you, that those things occurred because they didn't pull it out of, you know, just pull it out of the air. That's not what happened. Somebody, there was a case somewhere that got their attention. You know, training day was, like I said, think about this, Kirk. Denzel Washington did some amazing movies and he never won an Oscar for it. But you know what he won an Oscar for? Training. And he was a bad guy. And people start even looking at him differently because he played that role so well. They were like, oh my God, man, I don't know. I can't take some people who really love Denzel Washington felt like they couldn't take him in that role.
Yeah. Hey, you know, you brought something up and I was going to add on this. Surveillance. You know, when you're doing surveillance, and I've noticed that in the movies, they're so careful. Everybody, like the cops are behind them. And I guess that the thought process is that these people are so good that they know exactly who's surveilling them and they're watching all the time and they're taking all these courses. In my experience doing some surveillance in the past, with some drug units and stuff like that, I've noticed that everybody always thinks, the police officers always think, oh, we've got burned. They know I'm following them. They know I'm following them. And in reality, they don't really pay attention that much at all. And I don't know if it's been your experience with that, but, the suspects that we've been following, we followed them for like 2 days. And they had no clue that we were following, that we had five cars following them. We had a helicopter up at one point looking at things, and they just had absolutely no clue. Now, Hollywood would tell me that this is an organized drug ring, right, and these guys have all sorts of, you know, equipment and stuff, and they know that the police are following them, and that, you know, they're trying to burn us and all this stuff. But I think sometimes Hollywood actually gives the criminals a little bit more credit than they deserve. Yes, because realistically, criminals do some dumb things, and they're not the criminal masterminds that Hollywood portrays them to be. The majority of people out there that commit crimes are not masterminds. They're not, they're not psychopaths. And I always tell people this is kind of on another tangent, but all these kids that want to be. And if you're a kid listening and you want to be a forensic psychologist and catch all the serial killers out there, because that's very popular right now. Well, fortunately for us, there's not enough serial killers out there to keep you in business. All of the criminal minds and all those shows would have you believe that there's a ton of serial killers out there, and we need a bunch of forensic psychologists to track them down. Now there are bad people out there and they do bad things, but generally, there's not enough of them out there to keep you employed. So,
And you're right about that, man. There are definitely a bunch of predators everywhere. Hell, people thought John Wayne Gacy was a good guy until they got in that basement. So,
yes.
You know,
and there are bad ones, but the majority, I would say the majority of people that commit crimes, they get glorified and they get given a lot more credit than they ever deserve, than what they're worth on television.
You know, I was going to talk to you about too, Kirk, because, you know, every show, they usually have a subject matter expert, you know, on the show that's assigned to, and it's usually a retired police officer who has some tactical, you know, experience either with SWAT or something like that. And it always blows my mind. And this is what I love about the movie Seven. Have you seen the Seven? Seven, the movie?
Yes.
All right. So that movie is one of the first times when they actually did it right. Because I don't know if you remember, they were going into they were doing a search warrant at what's his name? I can't remember the guy. He's a bad guy. Kevin something. I can't hear his name. But anyway, they're hitting the house. And the SWAT team comes up. And they say, and you know, you see Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt are right there. And they blow past them. And they like, hey, SWAT before dicks. And then they go. And I'm like, exactly. I'm like, because some shows, they have the detectives going in, kicking the door, and SWAT's behind them. I'm like, how does that work? I'm like, why? And like, so when I saw Seven, I'm like, okay, whoever's on scene, whoever their subject matter expert is for this movie has got it right, because that's how it would work. Why would we call SWAT out only to let the detectives kick the door in. I'm like, that ain't going to happen. SWAT kicks the door in. They make sure everything is secure. They tell the detectives, okay, guys, y'all can come in. That's how it works, you know. But yeah, in some of these movies, they have the detectives going in first. And I'm like, what?
No, yeah.
You know,
yeah, and they're going in, and they're going in with a handgun. Where we all know that when you're going in the SWAT, they're going in with longer rifles and
yes.
a little more precision.
Flashbangs. Yeah, come on.
Yes, exactly. And they've got all the stuff. They've got the helmets, and the detective never has any equipment on other than maybe an external vest or something like that.
That's it. And it.
Yeah.
And it all is. It has is, you know, whatever, you know, ISP, DPD, whatever, you know. I mean, that was one of the things I always, when I watch movies, I try to be, you know, even my wife sometimes, I'll be like, look, that wouldn't happen that way. And she's like, I'm just telling you, that just wouldn't happen that way. That's not how that would happen. You know, you're not going to do that. Like, it was have you seen Ballard? Ballard is a new show. It's about
Colton. I just watched Ballard. I loved it. It's great. It is a great show. And there are so many things wrong with it. I mean, there are so many times where she kind of went a little bit rogue. It's like Bosch. And there's little things like taking evidence and from a scene and putting it somewhere else that you can't get away with that. Oh. And when you see stuff like that, it's great for television. But the police officer in me says, well, all of that evidence just got thrown out.
Yes.
Because
all tainted.
It was all tainted. And so, when it goes to trial, he or she's going to get off because you have no more evidence because everything that you found after you illegally took that evidence or you went into that house without a search warrant, but it's a great show. And it's,
no,
it's
I was entertained. Don't get me wrong, Kirk. I loved it. I watched every episode but I felt the same way. I kept telling my wife, I kept saying like, all right, that's great, but that ain't going to happen. I mean, everything was just so, it's a movie, I know. So I got to stop that because it's synchronized. It's, you know, everything is all played out. I get it. But you know, to your point, it's there to entertain us, which it did. So
it is. And it's there to entertain us. And I think that's probably the big thing is to realize that, you know, not everything that you see on television is real, obviously. I don't know, with you as a chief, and do you feel like any of this stuff has, because police shows have, I think there's more on now than there ever were. And, you know, they're more graphic, they're more sensationalized. Has that had any effect on, you know, the community trust in your community or even just recruitment in general?
Well, I'll be honest with you on this, Kirk. So when I go back and I look at the history of especially law, I know I talked about The Rookies, which came out probably in the early 70s. SWAT was a 70s show. Somebody's Adam 12, you know. One of the things I will say it does influence the community because they see, and I'm just going to be real about this, they see African Americans, you know, being arrested almost every time in these shows. So, you know, and this is where people, you know, where these, you talk about illicit biases come into play because they've seen it, their mind has been constantly fed. Oh, well, look who's, you know, a black man's getting arrested. He must be the bad guy. Black man's getting arrested. He must be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. A black man's getting arrested. You know what I'm saying? So, of course, it affects the community. I mean, it does. I mean, some people who watch, that's all they do is watch TV. Or they watch the news, and if that's all they feed you, that's all you believe, even though we know as law enforcement that that's not true. But you can't tell the community that if that's all they've ever seen. So, right. Unfortunately, I do believe it affects the community. I know it's, you know, it's not real, but sometimes, you know, I mean, these shows, which are not real, actually becomes reality for some people. It's crazy.
Well, and,
it's
true. Exactly. And I've had people, not quote television shows, but, you know, the biggest thing that I've always had is the complete misunderstanding of Miranda, the Miranda law. So, you know, the Miranda law is really a court case, that basically says that, you know, we have to read you your rights before we question you. And there's, for everybody listening, there's three different things. You have to be questioned by the police department. You have to be in custody, so not free to leave. And you have to be questioned about a crime. Yeah. It's not about questioning about asking your name or anything like that. They have to be asking you things that would be incriminating. So the television would make you look at it and say, well, as soon as they put the handcuffs on you, it's, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can't be used against you in a court of law. When in fact, that's not the case, because we don't actually read those Miranda rights until we're going to question you and you're in custody. So I've had a lot of people, yell at me and say, you never read me my rights. You never read me my rights. And I'm like, you're here on a warrant. I'm not going to question you. You had a
suspension. Or you might be the transport car.
Yes. I'm only taking you to the station. We're not doing an investigation. So, you know, that's one of the things that I've noticed. Have you had anything like that in your career where you've noticed people?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's the first thing they say, you know. It's like, oh, you're not going to, you know, you haven't read me my rights. I'm like, sir, I haven't asked you any questions as well. So, I mean, I'm not interrogating you. I'm not interviewing you. And I think people, and they get that, like you said, it's all sensationalized on these shows. And people feel like that, you know, they watch all these different shows and now it starts to resonate into real life. Where people feel like they can do certain things based off of a show, off of, you know, something. I'm like, look, this show, this is a police movie. This is Hollywood. Like, that's basically what we're talking about. I don't care what Hollywood tells you. That doesn't work here, you know, and it never will. And I think, you know, when I think back about, man, there's so many shows I've watched. I just, like, some of them I feel like, like, I know Mimi and I talked about The Wire. I truly felt like it was as real of a police show that I've ever seen. I mean, it was just, I think she talked about the political part, the gangs, it was more of a narcotics type warfare going on. Not so much as street gangs like you would see in Chicago. It's Baltimore. It was based out of Baltimore. So, it looked, I mean, the things that they were running into, the pitfalls that they were running into, the command. I mean, when you talk about administrative personnel, you're talking about the chief, the deputy chief, the pressure they were on to get crime numbers down, just like you and I both get from our city manager or the mayor or our city councils or just the community in, you know, and as a whole, they'll come to you and say, hey, chief, you know, we need crime to go down. What are you doing to get to reduce, you know, the crime footprint in our city? You know, and this show showed that. I mean, there was a guy who was throwing up in the bathroom. He was a captain of a district, I believe, a commander. And he was going to like their crime stat meeting, which, you know, with the chief. And man, he was throwing up because he knew his numbers were crap and he had to go explain it to the chief. He was throwing up before the thing. And I can guarantee you that has happened look, state police, we had our meetings too, where we had to come and explain what's going on in our districts, you know, and it's uncomfortable, man. It's uncomfortable. So I get it. So that just shows you that they really took some time to find out how real policing works, and then they implemented it into the show.
Nice. Yeah. That was one of the questions. What shows gets it right? And I think
I got it right.
Touched on that pretty good. You know, the last thing I was wanting to touch on is that we talked a little bit earlier that lone wolf cop, you know, you're a chief. I can tell you what I would do. I mean, you have this chief who's a renegade officer, operates outside the rules just to get the job done. But in my situation, and I would contrast that makes really good for television. But in reality, nobody's doing that by themselves. And I think it's important to stress that there is a strict adherence to protocols. And I talked about a little earlier about if you do these things, you're going to lose cases. And the goal for us is not to just get the arrest, right? We want to have the arrest and then get the right person and then make that arrest stick, which means that it's going to go to trial and they're going to, you know, then the prosecutor is going to be able to get a guilty verdict, because if that's justice, right? So I think when you have these things, and if you don't stress, we need to stress that importance of the teamwork aspect of your investigators working together, you know, following up on leads and then following that strict protocol, because there's been so many things. And if you just want to go back to real life, the O.J. Simpson case, right? So the O.J. Simpson case really taught police a ton about what we needed to be doing right as far as evidence collection. And that was all brought out in the media. And making sure that when we're collecting evidence, we're doing it right, and we're logging it, and we're securing it, and we're talking to people, and we're reading people's rights, because there's so much that goes on that Hollywood doesn't show. You know, Hollywood doesn't have the time to do that. And, you know, they do that to just, you know, for entertainment perspective. But, I think it's important to stress how much that we have to follow certain protocols. And there are certain things we just can't do, you know, and there's a lot of times we, you know, I think everybody knows you're not allowed to, you know, not allowed to beat suspects, but we see that happen in television a lot. And so, you know, you do something like that, that's a coerced confession, and they're going to walk free. And then you're not doing anybody any good. You're not doing your victims good. You're not doing your community good at all.
And we think about it, Kirk. I mean, you know, I was on the job when Rodney King, I worked that night when Rodney King, let's just get it straight. Rodney King was a career criminal. He was a career criminal now. I mean, but did he deserve the way he got beaten? No. Of course not. I mean, like, in no point, Kirk, did they ever try to make an arrest there. No one pulled the handcuffs out. They hadn't planned on doing that, man. They just was going to beat this dude's brains in. And I think when you talk about Hollywood, they see this happen in real life. Now that, you know, now they think that this is not an anomaly to them. They think, oh, well, police do this all the time, you know. And then all of a sudden you see movies where, you know, how many times you seen a police movie and they walk in and the video recorder is gone and then they turn it off, you know, in the movie. And everybody knows, uh-oh, you know, what's about to happen. So, and, you know, but see, that's what I say, man. Like, as much as we want to say it's Hollywood, they got it from somewhere.
Yeah.
Something spiked their interest to say, hey, we should do a movie about this. Now we have to sensationalize it because nobody gonna watch it if we don't. But the foundation of it, where did they get that from?
Yeah, and from my perspective as a police chief, and I Ballard, I loved Ballard.
Me too.
Ballard cannot work for my police department because she and Bosch. I mean, they may be great police officers, but they committed so many policy violations. They would have been suspended and ultimately fired. And I'm sorry, I just can't take the liability. It's not worth it. So I mean, you know, you look at these guys. Yeah, they might get the job done at the end of the day, but realistically, we have parameters that we have to work in. And if they're not going to work in those parameters, then they're not going to be working for the O'Fallon Police Department. I guarantee they're not going to be working for
Police Department either. Hey, like I say, I always laugh because Axel Foley, you know, he's from Beverly Hills Cop, Axel Foley. And then they had a real lieutenant, Detroit boss, who was actually his lieutenant, was, you know, from Detroit PD. And he used to, man, I'm like, I was thinking to myself, I would have to, he would be fired. Mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, you're fired. Okay.
Yes.
Don't even come back. I mean, like, how is Axel Foley running around Beverly Hills? I mean, getting into shootings. He's getting into shootings in a whole nother state, another jurisdiction. Well, uh-huh. I mean, he got no police violence there.
No, like, nothing at all. No, I mean, those are crimes.
Crimes, Axel Foley.
He's probably going to be in jail, but yeah. So, yeah. So in closing, you know, I would say my recommendations to anybody listening is Big fan of Ballard, big fan of Bosch. And I'm assuming, Dave, you're a big fan of The Wire.
I do. I will stand on The Wire as, and it's not just my opinion. I talk to other officers, you know, my brother's Chicago police officer. I got several other family members, CPD, but The Wire really just really gave you a real idea of what policing. Now, was it? It's not, you know, of course, not frame for frame, Kirk. You know, it's not that. But so much of it, you could tell that whoever their subject matter expert was really involved. Like he was, you know, I remember the scene from Heat. Their subject matter expert, whoever their technical, their tactical advisor was for Heat, the way they were overlapping and leapfrogging each other, you know, and you know, I mean, like, wow, I mean, like, that was something else, man. I was, you know, I know you remember Heat. It's probably one of the best. I think people will say it's probably one of the best action like shootouts they've ever seen. You know,
movie Heat.
Heat, the movie Heat.
It's probably one of my favorite movies. Yeah.
Yes, me too. I love it. And that scene, but it was even real to the point, Kirk, if you remember where they got the driver, the cook. Mm-hmm. So the cook was on parole or whatever. He can't, I mean, this could happen in true life. I believe that this, I know that situation occurs where he's like, look, I can't make it. I came here to be a short order cook. The owner of the cook is giving me crap. You know, he's not going to send me back. He's going to put a case on me to send me back, you know. So what the heck? I might as well just continue to do what I'm doing. So they go in there and he sees them cooking. He's like, he knows them from prison. He's like, hey, man, can you still handle the wheel? He's like, yeah, what you got? And then they brought him in to do that robbery because the other guy, if you remember, his normal driver got caught up because, mm-hmm. you know, they grabbed him and they killed his wife and all this stuff. But, yeah. but now, you know, but that scene, and then think about the counter surveillance in Heat, where the police were surveilling them. They were counter surveilling them and they had pictures on the police. I'm like, wow. Okay. I mean, like, so could a crew be that good? I mean, I there've been some pretty good, I mean, bank robbery crews out there. So, you know, so
rare, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, right. So I still believe the foundation always is some truth to the foundation of all these stories. And, you know, and then that's how they develop them. So I believe that to be true, but I'm with you on Ballard, man. Kirk, I just finished Ballard. And although I didn't, the police, tactics and all that were kind of whatever. But the show entertained the heck out of me. I ain't gonna lie.
Yep. That's all about entertainment. You know, I go back to my original was Chips. And as crazy as it was, I still like to watch an episode of Chips every once in a while. So,
hey, go on YouTube, Kirk. You need to pull it up. So,
yeah. Well,
good show, Kirk. I love it. That was good.
Yeah, great. So, we'll close it out. Thanks for, coming to another episode of Behind the Badge, sponsored by Team Hochberg. Like I said, Dave Hochberg wasn't able to make it with us today, but if you want to buy a home or refinance, 855-56-DAVID.